Here's a look at business and financial news from the Marketplace Morning Report. Good morning, I'm Deborah Beer in Los Angeles. Today marks the beginning of the third quarter and a week that could prove pivotal for the financial markets. The Federal Reserve meets Tuesday and Wednesday to consider a change in interest rates. And Friday, the Labor Department releases its monthly jobs report for June. Job growth has been strong this year. About 1.3 million new positions have been added. Not a bad 6 months for stocks either. The Dow Industrial Average has advanced 10.5% to 5,654. The NASDAQ Composite, representing technology shares and small companies, has gained more than 12.5%. Shares in software giant Microsoft have soared 56% since January, helping to increase the personal wealth of Chairman Bill Gates. According to Forbes magazine's annual survey of billionaires, he's worth $18 billion. That's up from about $13 billion last year. For the second consecutive year, Gates tops the Forbes list. He's followed by Omaha investor Warren Buffett with $15.3 billion. But as Marty Goldenson tells us from the New York desk, a growing number of Asian billionaires aren't too far behind.
Half of the top 10 billionaires are Asian, according to Forbes ranking. Hong Kong real estate magnate Li Shaoqi now ranks number 4 after Swiss industrialist Paul Sager. Li bounced a Japanese billionaire out of the number 4 spot, poor Yoshiaki Tsutsumi. The transportation emperor dropped to number 7 with less than $10 billion to his name. The 5th and 6th slots went to Tsai Wan Lin of Taiwan, Think Financial Services, and Li Ka-shing of Hong Kong, the entrepreneur. Of the 447 billionaires that Forbes listed, 123 are Asian. Which is not surprising, really. Asia's contribution to the global economic output is rising fast. It was 17% in 1980, 25% today. The U.S. is still home to one-third of the world's billionaires. And the world's richest woman, Lillian Bentancur, heir to the L'Oreal Cosmetics empire. She's way down on the list, only $5 billion. In New York, I'm Marty Goldenson.
Turning to the far reaches of the earth, on Sunday, Mongolians voted in their second democratic parliamentary elections since communist rule ended there 6 years ago. Nearly 90% of the 1 million voters cast ballots, and many of them traveled for hours on horseback to get to the polls. As Marketplace's Jocelyn Ford reports from Ulaanbaatar, the economy was the deciding issue.
The results were a major surprise for the nation. Voters threw out one of the world's longest-lived communist parties and voted in a democratic coalition. At issue was the economy and alleged corruption. Smukutsu, a 30-year-old psychologist, talked about some of her concerns.
The economic situation is very bad.
Smukutsu campaigned for the democratic coalition, but even she said she didn't want a landslide victory. After 76 years of single-party rule, she says it's important to have a strong opposition to check those in power. The transition from a Soviet-style centralized economy to a market economy has been rough with high inflation and unemployment, but Mongolians voted for even faster change. The Democratic Coalition advocates quicker privatization, and it's hopeful its pro-business policies will attract more foreign investment. From Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia, this is Jocelyn Ford.
Cigarette maker Liggett Group is facing a $5.5 million penalty for a law that no longer exists. The federal law required cigarette makers to use a minimum of 75% U.S. tobacco leaf. The General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade nullified that law with the exception of 1994. And in that year, 40% of Liggett's leafs were from overseas. On the overseas markets, Tokyo's Nikkei stock average fell 75 points today, about a third of a percent. The dollar's higher in European trading, changing hands at 109.7 yen. I'm Deborah Beer. This is PRI, Public Radio International. Join us later today for a half hour of Marketplace. Here's David Brancaccio.
Some New York bankers have come up with an unusual plan. The city would issue bonds backed by judgments against deadbeat parents. Kids would get the money they're owed, and believe it or not, it should be a pretty safe investment for bondholders. Join us later for a half hour of Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Deborah Baer. Well, July is here, marking the start of the second half of the year. And while most newspapers today are totaling up gains and losses on the stock market and for mutual funds, Greg David, the editor of Crain's New York Business, has the economy on his mind. He joins us this morning. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Deborah.
So, are you here with some good news or bad news?
Oh, I think it's all good news. I think the economy is gaining a lot of strength. Inflation is very low. The numbers we've seen are very impressive. And I think we're set for the second half of the year.
Well, so let's talk about the numbers. Job creation has been pretty strong, of course.
During the Clinton administration, we've created about 14 million jobs. In the last month that we have numbers for, 348,000 jobs. Inflation around the country is less than 3% a year. Unemployment is around 5.2%. Those are good numbers, especially when you remember that this economic expansion is entering its sixth year. That's really impressive.
So, Greg, what is the magic, really? Is it one man? Is it Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan?
Well, I'll give Greenspan credit on the inflation front, but no, the credit goes to everyone out there in the country because the consumer is spending again.
Which regions of the country are doing particularly well?
Well, it's pretty broad, but there are a couple places that I want to note, one of which is California, where you are. There's a new study which shows that personal income in California will go up by 6.2% this year. That's an incredible performance. Inflation is 3%, and personal income is going to go up more than 6%. That's a tremendous real gain. And here in the East, we're seeing a lot of benefits as well. New York is adding advertising-related jobs for the first time in a decade because of this consumer expansion. Ooh. While we're not quite as strong as the rest of the country, things are improving sharply here as well.
So jobs are popping up in the advertising business because consumers are spending more?
Jobs are popping up in the advertising business because consumer companies are very bullish and pouring millions and millions of dollars into advertising because they think they can get consumers to spend. You bet.
So I guess Mr. Robert Reich is right about this Goldilocks economy, huh?
Oh, I guess I got to give him one, huh? Well, I will. But there are some risks, and I think I could name three. One of which is an international crisis that changes the whole psychological and economic framework.
Such as?
I don't know. What if the oil supply were cut off? Mm-hmm. Or what if Russia had a revolution? I mean, that's the way you've got to think if you're thinking about such crises. Two, you know, the auto talks in Detroit could result in a long strike this fall, which could dampen economic activity.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing is some sign that inflation is back. The Fed went looking in June and couldn't find any, but if they find some later in the year, they just might decide to ratchet up interest rates, which would be another risk that could slow the economy.
So Mr. Greg David predicts smooth sailing for the U.S. economy through the rest of this year, possibly 7 years of an expansion before we see a downturn?
That's where I'm putting my money, and I've got one more prediction for you, Deborah.
What's that?
Oh, this is good news for Bill Clinton.
Oh, yeah.
All this talk about downsizing and how upset everyone is about the state of the economy is going to disappear by November. He is going to be riding a very strong recovery into that election. And with the other things he's done, I agree with the polls. He looks pretty golden today.
But anything could happen between now and then, couldn't it?
They could, but I'd rather be Bill Clinton than Bob Dole, I'll tell you.
Have a nice 4th of July, Greg.
Same to you, Deborah.
Greg David is the editor of Crane's New York Business.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by KUSC at the University of Southern California. Major financial support is generated by GE and its power systems business, international manufacturers of advanced power generation technology. Because at GE, we bring good things to life. Additional support comes from this and other public radio stations nationwide. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report on PRI, Public Radio International.
Here's a look at business and financial news from the Marketplace Morning Report. Good morning, I'm Deborah Bear in Los Angeles. A billion here, a billion there. After a while, it adds up to some real money. For Bill Gates, it adds up to about $18 billion, a personal fortune that makes him the richest private citizen on Earth. That according to Forbes magazine's annual survey of billionaires. The chairman of Microsoft tops the list for the second straight year. Close behind at number two is Warren Buffett. The famous Omaha investor is said to be worth $15.3 billion. Since last year, Bill Gates' fortune has grown by some 40%, thanks mostly to Microsoft's skyrocketing share price. It's up 56% since January. There's speculation that British Airways could be prepared to cut its links with U.S. Air in a bid to win regulatory approval for its recently announced deal with American Airlines. The Observer newspaper in Britain reports that BA and American are worried about the criticism their alliance has provoked. From London, Chris Kirkham has more.
The code-sharing and ticketing arrangement between BA and American would give the two airlines 60% of the transatlantic traffic into Heathrow, and that sparked off a furious row. Regulatory bodies in the US and Britain are studying the deal, and competitors like Richard Branson's Virgin Airlines are running high-profile campaigns against what they say is a merger in all but name, which would drive ticket prices higher and other carriers out of business. In a bid to fight off these allegations, BA is now reported to be willing to dispose of its 25% stake in US Air, purchased for $400 million in 1993. BA has also said it'll end its opposition to an open skies agreement if the deal with American is approved. This manoeuvring won't appease Virgin. Whether it satisfies the regulators remains to be seen. From the European desk, this is Chris Kirkham for Marketplace.
Today in Washington, two consumer groups are planning to speak out against what they call a deadly deal between Transportation Secretary Federico Peña and General Motors. In 1994, Peña brokered an unprecedented arrangement with GM, agreeing not to recall thousands of pickups with side-mounted gasoline tanks if the car company spent $51 million on safety and education programs. This is not the first time Peña has earned the ire of consumer groups, as Cynthia Engel reports from Washington.
Consumer advocates say Transportation Secretary Federico Peña has consistently proven himself soft on business. In addition to the 1994 deal with GM, over the last year, instead of forcing recalls, the DOT allowed Chrysler to voluntarily replace rear latches in minivans and Ford to voluntarily replace ignition switches. Auto Week editor Matt DeLorenzo says Peña is under fire because the Clinton administration wants to appease business and consumers at the same time. The deals have allowed manufacturers to avoid costly recalls by providing money for consumer safety programs.
I think in trying to take an innovative approach to some of these safety issues and try to work with the manufacturers, he's obviously upset some of the people in the consumer advocate end of the spectrum.
And DeLorenzo says the pressure on Peña is not likely to let up. Among the issues on the agenda, the safety of airbags. I'm Cynthia Engel for Marketplace.
Turning to Wall Street, it's a big week for the financial markets. The Federal Reserve will meet on Tuesday and Wednesday to consider a change in interest rates. And on Friday, the Labor Department releases its monthly jobs report for June. That should give us a peek at how healthy the economy is. The Dow Industrials dropped 50 points last week to 56.54. The NASDAQ Composite turned in an impressive rally on Friday. It grew by more than 1.5%. In Los Angeles, I'm Deborah Baer. This is PRI, Public Radio International. Join us later today for a half hour of Marketplace. Here's David Brancaccio.
Parents who don't pay their child support are a national problem. One unusual solution, bonds that would provide immediate support for kids and would later be paid back by wages and judgments against the deadbeats. Join us later for a half hour of Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Deborah Baer. The number of people taking classes and even earning degrees over the internet is growing. The typical online student is older, professional, and self-motivated. As Marketplace contributor Deborah Monroe discovered, the internet is helping colleges, large and small, expand their enrollment.
Champlain College Enrollment 1500 is one example, offering associate or professional degrees entirely online to students flung far and wide in the rural area of Burlington, Vermont. In Poughkeepsie, New York, Marist College quickly jumped online when several hundred of its graduate students lost their jobs when IBM downsized. Many of the students, just one class shy of getting their master's, moved out of state in search for new jobs. Marist responded by offering the classes over the internet. And it's not just small colleges, it's just about all of them. Dennis Foley, a novelist who teaches a UCLA writing course on the internet, says these classes have enormous potential.
You can go through the entire inventory of course offerings in a university system as big as, let's say, University of California, And you can go down the list and say, which of these courses can be taught over the Internet? Yes, 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 yes.
And yes, 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 the Internet is also a money saver. A university need only bill the students and pay the instructor, eliminating expenses like classrooms, chalk, light, and heat. And while Internet students might not always be seen, they are beginning to be heard, as Professor Jerry Yule quickly found out as he helped the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana launch an online calculus course.
During this time, we asked the students to come forth and give us any criticisms at all, because we said we're doing something altogether new and we're bound to make mistakes. And the students uniformly, 60 students, came and said the lectures were an unfair imposition on their time, that they could get the material very easily through our media without the lectures, and to please stop requiring lectures.
Which is precisely what Yule and his colleagues did, dump the lectures, never to reinstate them. The online calculus course uses a program designed especially for the computer, including text, graphics, animation, even sound. Students learn the same way researchers do, through discovery, visualization, and experimentation. Ken Ford, director of the Institute for Human and Machine Cognition at the University of West Florida, says this is an example of a good Internet course, of which there are many. But there are some bad classes out there, too, ones where universities merely shovel tired old lectures or pre-existing textbooks onto the Internet and charge students the same amount of money.
The pressures often come from groups like the State Boards of Regents that are facing just rapidly escalating educational costs and diminished willingness of society to pay for education. And they see this as a possible silver bullet.
Internet technology also means students lose out on face-to-face intimacy with their teacher and classmates. But as UCLA writing instructor Dennis Foley says, this isn't always a bad thing.
Everybody can email back and forth to the instructor. And you've got all week for your at your leisure and at the students to be able to ask and answer questions. And for those students who are normally shy in a classroom setting and might not ask a question, they'll ask it over the Internet.
These two shy types may soon be betrayed by the same technology that allowed them some anonymous comfort. Dennis Foley predicts within a year, universities will begin handing out laptop computers with teleconferencing equipment, enabling students to actually see their instructors while talking to them. In Los Angeles, this is Deborah Monroe for Marketplace.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by KUSC at the University of Southern California. Major financial support is generated by GE and its power systems business, international manufacturers of advanced power generation technology. Because at GE, we bring good things to life. Additional support comes from this and other public radio stations nationwide. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report on PRI, Public Radio International.
Here's a look at business and financial news from the Marketplace Morning Report. Good morning, I'm Deborah Baer in Los Angeles. Today marks the beginning of the third quarter and a week that could prove pivotal to the financial markets. The Federal Reserve meets Tuesday and Wednesday to consider a hike in interest rates. Wall Street is betting the Fed will leave well enough alone. Analyst Larry Wachtel at Prudential Securities says if the Fed delivers a surprise, it will wreak havoc on the markets, and a lot of Wall Street professionals will be cutting their 4th of July vacations short. The other big event this week is the Labor Department's monthly jobs report for June. It's out on Friday. The economy has created more than 1.25 million jobs so far this year. It's been a decent 6 months for stocks as well. The Dow, for instance, is up 10.5% on the year. The NASDAQ composite has swelled by more than 12.5%. Here's something else that's swelling. Bill Gates' personal wealth. Thanks largely to Microsoft's soaring share price, Gates is worth about 40% more this year with a personal fortune of $18 billion. That makes him the richest private citizen on Earth for the second straight year, according to Forbes magazine's annual survey of billionaires. Number two, with $15.3 billion, is Omaha investor Warren Buffett. As Marty Goldenson tells us from New York, however, some Asian billionaires are closing in.
Half of the top 10 billionaires are Asian, according to Forbes ranking. Hong Kong real estate magnate Li Shaoqi now ranks number 4 after Swiss industrialist Paul Sager. Li bounced a Japanese billionaire out of the number 4 spot. Poor Yoshiaki Tsutsumi, the transportation emperor, dropped to number 7 with less than $10 billion to his name. The 5th and 6th slots went to Tsai Wan-lin of Taiwan, Think Financial Services, and Li Ka-shing of Hong Kong, the entrepreneur. Of the 447 billionaires that Forbes listed, 123 are Asian, which is not surprising, really. Asia's contribution to the global economic output is rising fast. It was 17% in 1980, 25% today. The U.S. is still home to one-third of the world's billionaires. And the world's richest woman, Lillian Bentancur, heir to the L'Oreal Cosmetics empire. She's way down on the list, only $5 billion. In New York, I'm Marty Goldenson.
Turning to the far reaches of the earth, on Sunday, Mongolians voted in their second democratic parliamentary elections since communist rule ended 6 years ago with a peaceful revolution. Nearly 90% of the 1 million voters cast ballots. Many of them traveled for hours on horseback to get to the polls. As Marketplace's Jocelyn Ford reports from Ulaanbaatar, the economy was the deciding issue.
The results were a major surprise for the nation. Voters threw out one of the world's longest-lived communist parties and voted in a democratic coalition. At issue was the economy and alleged corruption. Smuk Kutsu, a 30-year-old psychologist, talked about some of her concerns.
The economic situation is very bad.
Smuk Kutsu campaigned for the democratic coalition, but even she said she didn't want a landslide victory. After 76 years of single-party rule, she says it's important to have a strong opposition to check those in power. The transition from a Soviet-style centralized economy to a market economy has been rough with high inflation and unemployment, but Mongolians voted for even faster change. The Democratic Coalition advocates quicker privatization, and it's hopeful its pro-business policies will attract more foreign investment. From Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia, this is Jocelyn Ford.
On the overseas markets, Tokyo's Nikkei stock average fell 75 points today. That's a loss of about a third of a percent. And in European trading, the dollar is mixed against key currencies. It's down against the yen, moving at 109.65 yen. In Los Angeles, I'm Deborah Baer. This is the Marketplace Morning Report on PRI, Public Radio International. Join us later today for a half hour of Marketplace. Here's David Brancaccio.
Some New York bankers have come up with an unusual plan. The city would issue bonds backed by judgments against deadbeat parents. Kids would get the money they're owed, and believe it or not, it should be a pretty safe investment for bondholders. Join us later for a half hour of Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Deborah Baer. Well, July is here, marking the start of the second half of the year. And while most newspapers today are totaling up gains and losses on the stock market and for mutual funds, Greg David, the editor of Crain's New York Business, has the economy on his mind. He joins us this morning. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Deborah.
So, are you here with some good news or bad news?
Oh, I think it's all good news. I think the economy is gaining a lot of strength. Inflation is very low. The numbers we've seen are very impressive. And I think we're set for the second half of the year.
Well, so let's talk about the numbers. Job creation has been pretty strong, of course.
During the Clinton administration, we've created about 14 million jobs. In the last month that we have numbers for, 348,000 jobs. Inflation around the country is less than 3% a year. Unemployment is around 5.2%. Those are good numbers, especially when you remember that this economic expansion is entering its sixth year. That's really impressive.
So, Greg, what is the magic, really? Is it one man? Is it Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan?
Well, I'll give Greenspan credit on the inflation front, but no, the credit goes to everyone out there in the country because the consumer is spending again.
Which regions of the country are doing particularly well?
Well, it's pretty broad, but there are a couple places that I want to note, one of which is California, where you are. There's a new study which shows that personal income in California will go up by 6.2% this year. That's an incredible performance. Inflation is 3%, and personal income is going to go up more than 6%. That's a tremendous real gain. And here in the East, we're seeing a lot of benefits as well. New York is adding advertising-related jobs for the first time in a decade because of this consumer expansion. Mm-hmm. While we're not quite as strong as the rest of the country, things are improving sharply here as well.
So jobs are popping up in the advertising business because consumers are spending more?
Jobs are popping up in the advertising business because consumer companies are very bullish and pouring millions and millions of dollars into advertising because they think they can get consumers to spend. You bet.
So I guess Mr. Robert Reich is right about this Goldilocks economy, huh?
Oh, I guess I got to give him one, huh? Well, I will. But there are some risks, and I think I could name three, one of which is an international crisis that changes the whole psychological and economic framework.
Such as?
I don't know. What if the oil supply were cut off? Mm-hmm. Or what if Russia had a revolution? I mean, that's the way you've got to think if you're thinking about such crises. Two, you know, the auto talks in Detroit could result in a long strike this fall, which could dampen economic activity.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing is some sign that inflation is back. The Fed went looking in June and couldn't find any, but if they find some later in the year, they just might decide to ratchet up interest rates, which would be another risk that could slow the economy.
Mm. So Mr. Greg David predicts smooth sailing for the U.S. economy through the rest of this year, possibly 7 years of an expansion before we see a downturn?
That's where I'm putting my money. And I've got one more prediction for you, Deborah.
What's that?
Oh, this is good news for Bill Clinton.
Oh, yeah.
All this talk about downsizing and how upset everyone is about the state of the economy is going to disappear by November. He is going to be riding a very strong recovery into that election. And with the other things he's done, I agree with the polls. He looks pretty golden today.
But anything could happen between now and then, couldn't it?
They could, but I'd rather be Bill Clinton than Bob Dole, I'll tell you.
Have a nice 4th of July, Greg.
Same to you, Deborah.
Greg David is the editor of Crane's New York Business.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by KUSC at the University of Southern California. Major financial support is generated by GE and its power systems business, international manufacturers of advanced power generation technology. Because at GE, we bring good things to life. Additional support comes from this and other public radio stations nationwide. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report on PRI, Public Radio International.